Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
It's October, time to get back to work at our jobs and our churches, synagogues and our community and social groups and our children's schools and activities. But let me ask you, did you take time out this summer to ease off from work? Slow down the pace, truly relax, and take a nice, long, stress-free vacation with the family? Did the job remain at the center of your universe, unfortunately, all summer long? And sadly, you're now as stressed out as ever as you start the fall. Well, conventional wisdom says that job stress should be reserved for the young, those in their 20s and 30s launching careers and trying to impress the new boss. But at middle age, do you remain tired and stressed out all the time at home because you spend all your free time thinking about work? You know, throughout my 30s and 40s, it was all about job and career, and I worked for several large corporations, and for me, the company, my current employer, defined my self-worth as a person. Isn't that ridiculous? When I cherished a job and was moving forward, my whole life felt great. The downside was I was willing to sacrifice quality time at home, and I moved my spouse and children all around the country, not to their great benefit. And whenever I didn't get that promotion or became sidetracked in a corporate reorganization, I felt diminished as a person, as a husband and a father, and socially, even though work had nothing to do with my skills in those areas. And when I was stuck in a job I didn't like, my whole life felt crappy. But I still work long hours because company culture said that I should, and everyone else did. And I felt like I was giving my all when I worked 50 or 60 hours a week, but my next guest, Greg Marcus, PhD, used to work 90 hours a week, and that's almost 13 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the good news, on his own initiative, he was able to cut his hours from 90 to 60, and his bosses didn't complain. In fact, his career took off. And even more remarkable, he was able to accomplish more in 60 hours than he had in 90. And eventually he became even wiser and abandoned the corporate grind to help lead thousands to accomplish life balance, working less to accomplish more. And Greg Marcus, PhD, has his PhD from MIT in molecular biology, and he spent 10 years in a successful marketing career on Silicon Valley. And he left the corporate world for success as an author, speaker, consultant, and, as he puts it, a stay-at-home dad. In 2013, he founded Idle Buster Coaching Institute. I love that name. And he's author of the new book, Busting the Corporate Idol, Self-Help for the Chronically Overworked. And hello, Dr. Greg, and welcome to Middle Age Could Be Your Best Age.
Well, hi, Roy. Boy, I was listening to you tell your personal story, and boy, did that sound familiar to me. It is, you know, it's a journey many of us have taken in one form or another.
Yeah. Well, to begin, tell us about that one day in your life when you realized that your priorities were all wrong and that you were putting way too much time and energy into your career.
Well, it happened right around this time of year. It was on Yom Kippur in the mid-2000s.
Oh, nice.
And at the time, it was one of those real low points in my career.
Yeah.
It went from just a few months earlier, I felt like I was on top with everything was going great, and I was in charge of this important product team. Then the whole thing flopped, and all the blame was put on me. And I started working even longer hours. That's when I was, you know, right up around that 90 point. And I was feeling pretty low, so I went into Yom Kippur, which, as many people know, the big thing is you don't eat or drink that day. You sit and reflect on your life. What have I done wrong? What can I do better? And it was about 3 in the afternoon. I was kind of resting because I was tired from the lack of food and water.
Yeah.
And this, I kind of glanced down at the prayer book, and these words jumped out at me. Don't turn to idols or create molten things. Yeah, this kind of was my reaction. And I started very dismissively in my head. It's like, well, idols, that's the statue-worshipping thing from thousands of years ago. What does that apply to today when this phrase, it's like it popped into my head. It's like, you need to do what's best for the company.
Yeah.
And boy, when I heard that, my stomach clenched up and I started sweating, because that's, for listeners in the corporate world, they'll recognize some variant to that. It's the rationalization when we have to do something that is going to make somebody unhappy, either a canceled project or a layoff or, you know what, we need the revenue, and even though we kind of know that this might not be quite ready, we're going to ship the product.
Yeah.
And pick up the pieces later.
Yeah, I love that title of your book, Busting the Corporate Idol. And in fact, so many of us are treating the company, as we put it, like some kind of a false god.
That was exactly it. And I said, oh, my God, I've turned my company into a false god.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was feeling a lot of those feelings of worthlessness that you talked about. And just kind of this work and work and work. I was chasing this false idol to make myself feel better. And I said to myself, you know what? I am tired of doing what's best for the company.
Yeah.
I'm going to start doing what's best for me and doing what's best for my family and the people in my life.
Yeah, I loved in your book, you quote that or noted that one of the leading questions that people ask Silicon Valley recruiters is, how do I get my life back? We all know they're paid big bucks out there, but maybe they're giving too much to the company.
That's right. It's what's, as you pointed out, when I cut my hours by a third, not a single person at work noticed.
Huh.
I became more effective because I wasn't tired and stressed out all the time.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Then I took another job, cut my hours by a third again, so now it's 40 to 50 hours.
Oh, that's
and
wild.
I got even more effective.
Yeah, that's great.
Because it's a matter of focus, and it's a matter of really, you know, when you're working all the time, you're just crazy going from here to there, and sit back and think and be strategic.
Yeah, that's right. You know, besides neglecting those we love the most, what are some of the other negative impacts of chronic overwork? I think some of them are pretty obvious, but
sure. Well, there is fatigue.
Yeah.
People have more health issues, so you're absent from work more. You get just everything from getting more colds to being at higher risk for heart attack or even cancer.
Yeah, and I bet you know you eat poorly because you grab a sandwich or something or fast food order out at the desk. Don't even go out to lunch, and maybe you get home real late, and then the heavy dinner sits in your stomach all night.
Yeah, that's exactly right. One of my clients was telling me, he's like, well, I used to be on conference calls till 8 o'clock at night, and then I'd get off starving, and I'd come out of my office and say, who wants Taco Bell? And I'd run off to Taco Bell and
eat it
and feel crappy afterwards. And this is someone
of course,
who,
you don't have time for exercise when you're working 90 hours a week either.
That's right. And this guy wasn't 25. He was 55.
Yeah.
So,
and, of course, in the process, you're probably setting yourself up to die a lot younger when you give everything for the work like that.
That's right. The same person had a heart attack at a fairly young age, and thankfully he recovered from it. But it is really, we're really taking our lives in our hands when we let work take over our lives.
Well, whether or not you relish your present job, if you're working too hard and too long and neglecting the family, what's the one thing you can do right away to bring more balance into your life? I think you may have touched on that before, but...
Well, a great place to start, and what I tell people, is to get more sleep. According to the CDC, 30% of Americans are chronically sleep deprived.
Yeah.
So when I started taking my life back, your car's driving 100 miles an hour. You don't slam on the brakes.
Yeah, no.
That's the way to skid and flip out. You want to tap the brakes. So I said, you know what? My health is important to me. So I'm going to stop working at 9:30 so I have time to unwind.
Oh, I see. Yeah, it's so important that you unwind if you're going to get a decent night's sleep. Because like you say, you can't suddenly switch off everything and fall asleep.
That's right. And it's, you know, a lot of people get into sleeping pills or having to unwind at bedtime. And those things, actually harm your sleep in the long run. So
yeah.
Having that time to just relax and unwind, and by setting that firm boundary, you will find yourself reprioritizing, and you'll get your work done in however much time you allocate to it.
Yeah, isn't that amazing how the work seems to expand based on the time that's allotted to it?
That's right, and we also make more mistakes. I mean, I don't know if you've ever sent that email at 10 o'clock at night that really kind of upset somebody, and you have to spend a lot of time the next day calming everybody down, or maybe you set off one of these email chains just because you picked the wrong word. Well, if you never sent that email, you would have saved an hour the next day not having to pick
up
the pieces.
How were you able to accomplish more than after intentionally cutting your work hours, your job from 90 to 60 hours a week? Did you organize your work day? Is that how you did it? Or, of course, what you just said did part of it. You're not as stressed out, so you work better. But do you have a magic formula that helps you to reduce the work hours like that and still get more done?
Well, it's not like a magic bullet. It's a series of steps we need to take. There are three things that make us work too much. There's issues that relate to people, there's issues that relate to circumstances, and there's issues that relate to the corporate culture.
Yeah.
So there are little steps you can take in each of those areas.
Yeah.
For example, with people, I devised a system where I could try to understand who I could trust.
Oh, yes.
And what my coworkers and bosses were motivated by.
Yeah.
And when I understood that, I could deflect requests for extra work.
Yeah, that's and it's so important that you handle that correctly so that you do speak up and you don't get taken advantage of by coworkers or especially the boss. And I think it's fascinating how you said, I think somewhere I saw you said that overwork is often a symptom of lack of self-confidence or in yourself, and that you're willing to accept that and not stand up for yourself.
That's right. A lot of the times we tell ourselves a story that, we're so helpful, and people always know that they can come to us and we'll be there for them. And the flip side of that, though, is that maybe we don't feel good enough about ourselves to say no.
The
boss shows up or somebody shows up at 4:30 and it's like, oh, Greg, I have to have this for tomorrow.
Yeah.
Do you mind just taking a couple of minutes to put together this whole slide deck for me?
Yeah, even though your daughter has a recital that night that you really wanted to go see, you don't have to carry, the company needs this by 8 a.m. tomorrow morning.
That's right. That's exactly it. And so if we don't feel good about ourselves or we don't feel confident, we get fearful that, if I don't do this, maybe I'll lose my job. But if we are feeling secure in who we are and secure in what I call a people-first identity, it's like, geez, I'd really love to help you, but I have other assignments from people that require my time, and I can send you what I have, or I can give you 5 minutes of my time now to help put this together, but I'm not going to be able to do what you're asking.
And it's always so crucial when you offer an alternative, like you said, I can't do that right now, but I can send you something tomorrow or the next day, or I can give you 5 minutes right now, or what. You offer a positive alternative. It makes a big difference than just saying no.
That's right, and that's where the understanding, one of my clients has used this system and classified her boss as someone who I call a fox. And that's like the person from the fable of the fox and the crow, where the fox is the flatterer, and they always want to look good. So she realized that her boss always wanted to shine. So she got one of these last-minute requests, hey, can you prepare something for tomorrow's global meeting?
So I'll look good.
Right. So she said, I could, but I'm wondering, if we can just put it off for 2 weeks till the next meeting, these other things are gonna be resolved, and we can really prepare, and then we can hit it out of the park.
Yeah, that's
the other
great
person said, fantastic, good idea.
Yeah. That's perfect.
So, you know, it wasn't like it wasn't being asked for out of maliciousness. It was, and by couching it as a way to, hey, this will make you look really good. This will reflect well on the whole team. It becomes a no-brainer to,
boy, that got the old box feeling good.
That's right.
Yeah, I've had more than a few bosses like that. That it was all they take credit for your work, and but they always, you know, faintly praise you. But it's the sincerity is sometimes lacking.
Right, they'll faintly praise you as they take credit for things, and then if things go badly, it's the exact opposite.
Then it's all your fault.
Then it's all your fault, and I have stories about that too. If you'd like me to share, but it is. But it's understanding that.
So yeah, like when that big project you were talking about before fell through at that company, it was all your fault then, I'm sure.
It was all my fault, absolutely. Yeah. And I had a manager who was, unbeknownst to me, letting everyone, you know, was leading the charge of telling people that it was all my fault, which,
oh, great.
You know, and his role in that was had nothing to do with it. But, you know, what goes around comes around, and there came a point where we were in a meeting, and he looked at me, and this is where he would make a statement, and then I would go into the details, and at that point, I just sat silent. Like, well, fine, you're on top of this, and he was out of a job in 6 weeks because
that's great.
People realized that he couldn't do anything.
Yeah. Well, let's say that you're totally fed up with your current job, especially your boss, and you'd like to walk into his or her office the next day and resign, but we all know that generally is not the wisest thing to do. What tips do you have for someone that's ready to jump ship? Is it sometimes possible to improve circumstances right where you are so that you don't have to go somewhere else to get another job? Can things get better in your present job if you approach things differently?
I'm glad you asked that, because that's a great question. And I've actually put together something I call the Exit Plan Blueprint, which really helps people identify what are all of the key issues to think about when you're ready to jump ship.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, it's everything practical, like financial or legal. You know, is there something illegal going on? That's when you really do have to just make a move right away. But other times it might just be, oh, well, I'm really upset that I didn't get invited to this meeting. Or I feel like I'm being underutilized.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, maybe leaving is the right thing to do. Maybe it isn't.
Yeah, and I have a number of experiences in the past where I know, you know, I was upset at the moment, but I really did a foolish thing by leaving that job because I ended up in a worse one.
That's right, and it's thinking about what needs to come to come next. But if it is, you know, it may be one of these issues where the self-worth is too wrapped up in the job, so we start feeling bad that we're not being recognized.
Yeah, that's true. I like that not being invited to a meeting or something is so. I've seen that happen with a number of people so many times that you know, really there was probably a real good reason why they weren't invited and had nothing to do with the fact that they weren't doing good work or whatever they're fearing. But well, what about some of the financial considerations of changing jobs? If you're not in a position, perhaps, or if you're in the position perhaps for more than several years where you have to scale back and live off your spouse's income, what should you do to, this is such crucial to me, what do you do to buy confidence and time so that you're not panicked when you're doing a job search or you're doing a startup and you do it the right way? Are there some financial steps you can take in advance to make it easier so that you're confident in what you're doing when you're actually searching?
Absolutely. One question that I always ask people is, how many months could you go living by your current means where you could still pay for food and the mortgage?
Yeah,
and
you should always estimate longer than you think you'll need, because from experience, you never seem to find that job as quickly as you hope to.
No, it can take longer than you'd expected. The flip side, though, is that if you're unemployed, there may be expenses which you have today which you will not have, like dry cleaning, for example.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I was spending $100 a week on dry cleaning, and I actually ended up resigning without another job from the corporate world, and it was going to be for 2 months, and that was 5 years ago.
Huh.
So that's where I went through this whole personal transformation. But it was about 2 months of planning. What are we spending the money on?
Yeah.
What's our savings? And we had done a pretty good job of living below our means,
so
we knew how much money we had in the bank.
Well,
when
one
you
of
take
the keys,
that kind
obviously,
of inventory,
is to get your,
it might be to might be an indication that hey, it's time to start eating at home more.
Yeah, the key is to get the whole family to buy in, so that everyone is sacrificing. And also, I think a key is to talk about rewards when a new job is found or the business is started up and prospering, so that you know, everyone gives up something now, but there's a possibility of something extra in the future, so that everyone is really on board. And you certainly don't want your spouse and kids to be real resentful because they have to give something up because dad quit his job or mom quit her job.
That's right. And you said something good, which I want to amplify, which is there are probably short-term benefits to quitting your job that are very easy to overlook.
Huh.
For example, the story I told earlier about the guy who was just everyone was eating Taco Bell every night because he was too busy. Well, when he left his job, suddenly he remembered he loved to cook.
Oh.
So suddenly he started shopping more and cooking dinner with the family every night.
Huh.
And they started eating better.
Yeah.
And it started saving money because some nights it was a little more expensive than Taco Bell.
Yeah.
And so they had this great time together as a family, and they were saving money on food, and they were eating better.
Yeah.
And
I'm sure they got more exercise and had more quality time with the family and everything else.
That's right. So everybody's stress level went down. And one thing we found, for example, is when my wife and I were both working, and even when I was, you know, more or less in balance, we still paid $30 a month in late fees on library books.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, we had a couple kids who loved books. You just get busy, you miss a check, you pay the late check fee. So suddenly all of these little stressors, they start getting taken care of.
Yeah. Well, tell us all about your new book, Busting the Corporate Idol, Self-Help for the Chronically Overworked. How is that book organized, and you know, do we read the whole thing through, or can we concentrate on certain sections of it, or how's that set up?
Well, the book is set up in three parts. The first part tells my story, and it really explains this central metaphor of corporate idolatry, you know, why it is that to get so caught up in the company, and why it is as an institution it can only be a one-way relationship. And then the second part of the book really gets into the meat of overwork. It tells stories about people that cause us to overwork, circumstances that lead to overwork, and some of the ways that corporate culture can either encourage or discourage overwork.
Oh, I see.
And then the third part is the solutions.
Yeah,
so there's really three steps to bringing yourself back from this overwork lifestyle. And one is to secure a people-first identity. It's really to disentangle ourselves from this being all wrapped up in the company.
Yeah.
And it's not about saying no to work. It's about saying yes to other things.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
So it's like, oh, as I was describing earlier, my health is important, so I'm going to get more sleep.
Yeah, say to your boss, you don't want me to have a heart attack, do you?
That's right. Or you don't even need to say anything.
No,
he didn't know that I was working less.
That's
well, he
true.
Knew I was still up half the night.
Yeah,
he
and I don't have to worry about how long your coworkers are working if you're getting your job done and going beyond the call and you know, really being a solid contributor. If you can get that done in less time than the guy at the next desk or the next office, then more power to you as far as I'm
That's
concerned.
That's right. That's right. And toward the end of the book, I talk a lot about political savvy. You know, I think for a lot of good-hearted people, they really see politics as a four-letter word. It's for the manipulators and the empire builders. But people who don't participate in politics, as I used to not do, we're just advocating our ability to protect ourselves. So when someone's people started going after me, I didn't have that network of people who had my back.
Yeah.
Who said, "Hey, Greg, you know, so and so is stirring up trouble," or who was willing to stand up and say, "Hey, that's not all his fault."
I really like the way you identify the three types of foxes and the what are the other two?
The
wolves and
the scorpion
scorpions.
And the
and who you should associate with and who you shouldn't. That's a And by the way, you can, there's a free download that talks about that on your website, I think, www.idlebuster.com. I think I got that.
Yes,
called
that's right.
Workplace
it's like
Trust and Overwork Report.
That's right. It talks about shares the fables behind the scorpion and the fox and the wolf, and they're easy to remember stories. And you know, that scorpion's the person where if you disagree with them or their vision, it's like you stab them in the back.
Yeah, they're so wrapped up in their particular vision of the world and what the company should be.
That's right. And you just got to understand, it's like that's the way different people are. And it's not that they're necessarily out to get you or bad people. But if that's the way they are, then understand it and deal with it.
What's the best place to purchase your preview and purchase your book? Is it where should someone go to do that?
Well, the easiest place is to go to Amazon. It is available on Amazon.com as either an ebook or a paperback.
Yeah.
You can also order it from any bookstore in the country.
Oh, I see. And you're, like I said, your website, idlebuster.com, and you also offer a free 30-minute life strategy session. How does someone sign up for that?
Right. So, again, you can go to idlebuster.com, and a lot of the advice is in the book, but sometimes people need someone to sit and work with them and really deal with their own personal situation. So, you can go to the website and request a strategy session, and we'll set up a phone call, and I'll listen to your story and start offering suggestions.
Well, that certainly sounds like a good thing to do if you're really wrapped up in your work, too wrapped up in your work, and it's really a problem. And overwork is such a chronic problem for so many of us. We get so ingrained in corporate culture and so convinced that what's best for the company is best for us. And for those of us at middle age, in fact, any age, that's hogwash. And those we love, our spouse and our kids, plus our own enjoyment of life, are what's most important, not what the company and career, they should come second. And every one of us should have a good time earning a living, but job and career can never be our entire or even our primary focus if we are truly to enjoy our middle years. And I highly recommend you preview Dr. Greg Marcus's book, which is Busting the Corporate Idol. And thank you, Dr. Greg, for a fascinating interview and best of success in your idol busting.
Well, thank you so much, and thanks for what you're doing. You have a great show. I love listening to it.
Well, thank you very much, and best of luck in your book and your career. To conclude today's program, and again on next week's program, we're going to help you conquer a problem all too common at middle age, and that's job loss. We'll talk about a step-by-step journey from layoff to the job and career of your dreams. Instead of job search panic, which is so common, how about an inspiring career-altering adventure followed by a soft landing right where you choose to be? Let's start from the beginning, and this is hopefully hypothetical for most of you, but let's say last Friday you were called into your boss's office, you looked around and wondered why a human resources representative was present, and in your back of your mind you said, uh-oh, and the worst news was confirmed. After 13 years on the job, the company is eliminating your position and letting you go through no fault of your own, they assure you, but that doesn't help much. And they're giving you 5 months severance to soften the blow, and for now you can stay on the company health plan at least for 5 months. But it's now Monday morning, and you ask yourself, what next? You haven't looked for a job in years, and you understand job search today is much different than you remember, and you really haven't done anything different from what your present or recent job was, so you have no idea where do you begin looking for a new one. And we're going to discuss a five-stage process that worked for me, but only after two prior job searches that were filled with panic and frustration. So let's get started. Stage one, you need to buy the time you need to conduct a purposeful but relaxed career search. And you ask, how in the heck do you buy the time? Well, first of all, you need to estimate the time you think you'll need to locate the job or start up a business, and then multiply by two. It's always, unless you're extremely fortunate, the process usually takes much longer than expected. So then in step two, you itemize all the sources of family income during the estimated period you'll have between jobs. That, of course, includes your severance package if you have one, your spouse's income if he or she has one, rainy day savings and cash and liquid assets, and loss of a job certainly is a rainy day. How about other assets you can sell or cash in, say stocks that have appreciated over the years? Yeah, not a fire sale, obviously, but you have to stay away from the 401ks or the IRA unless you want a tax penalty unless you're over 59 and a half years old. And there, another possibility is loans against a whole life insurance policy, but of course this reduces the value you will receive if you die. A possible second mortgage or a home equity loan if your house is above water. And, of course, this will reduce the value of your downsizing receipt if you choose to sell at retirement, but it's still something you may need to do, and you can repay once you get that new job in hand. Or as a last resort, how about a non-stressful part-time job? It's got to be one that gives you plenty of free time and energy for the main task at hand, and that's locating your permanent position. But if it's a real no-brainer and not creating stress, it might be a possibility. Not recommended is taking a loan or a handout from family members. I found from experience of myself and others that this just generally leads to ill feelings and can lead to some real resentments. The step three, then, is to go over your family expenditures with a fine-tooth comb. Of course, obviously, you'll find some untouchables. You're not going to be able to reduce home mortgage and real estate taxes. Children's tuition and fees, if they're away from college, you certainly don't want to disrupt their education. Heating and electricity at home, but you can turn the thermostat down in the winter and up in the summer and save a little money that way. There's home and car maintenance, which you never can expect just when it will happen, but sometime your car is going to break down on the freeway or your roof is going to start leaking. Something's going to happen, and the house and the car really don't respect the fact that you're out of a job right now. And obviously there are insurance premiums you need to maintain, like your home, your auto, health, and life. Then we move on to discretionary expenditures. These are where you can really make some changes, some temporary cutbacks. Obviously, you can postpone or cancel altogether some major planned purchases, like that new large-screen, high-definition TV, or that planned vacation you were taking next year to the West Coast, or whatever. Eating out, how about one day a week instead of 3 days a week? And offset that by getting the family together for a sit-down the other 2 days in the family kitchen or the dining room. You'll have the same conversation, but you'll save a lot of money, hopefully. Obviously, you can cut back on movie, sports, and entertainment, but here again, it's got to be fair to all. You can't keep going to the movies while the kids stay home, and there are clothing that most of us can postpone and kids' activities, but there are two keys to all this. The sacrifice must be accepted and shared by all family members. It's time to have that family meeting around the kitchen table, and so that son or daughter or one member of the family doesn't feel like they're being asked to give up a whole bunch while everyone else isn't. And also another idea is promising everyone, singling out and promising certain rewards that that each person will receive once you find that new position or lock yourself into the career of your dreams. Sometimes if it's just a postponement and there is a light at the end of the tunnel, it's much more easy to accept, obviously. A last resort is sale of the primary residence and renting for a while, but that's a problem because it's not easy to sell a home quickly, especially in, if you're in a distressed market, and you certainly don't want to sell it, your home at a fire sale price. So that's generally not a good way to raise the funds you need for that job search. The step four, the end result, you prepare a comprehensive family transition budget. A budget that can be tracked, revised, and updated on a weekly basis, the estimated sources of income, the estimated expenses, and gaps to be filled through asset sales, a home equity loan, whatever. And once in place, the budget that can be tracked and updated in, say, 1 to 2 hours per week. It's certainly worth taking a look at that every week to see how you're tracking against that budget. And in effect, what you've done by establishing that transition budget is you purchase yourself time to identify your target career and then market yourself into that job. You have found a short-term source of income, and the immediate pressure is off. So then we move on to stage two, and that's what I call taking a mental vacation to define your ideal vocation. And you're seeking a job or small business or franchise or other source of income where someone will actually pay you to have a good time and enjoy your life doing something that will benefit others, but you'll also enjoy doing. You ask, how can I take a vacation when I don't have a job? And you ask, I don't have the time to take away from a job search because I need a job right now. How can I take a vacation? Well, when you think about it, it only makes sense to take the time to pinpoint the precise nature of the position you seek. This will narrow your job search and make you more focused and attractive to potential employers. When you tell somebody precisely what you can do and what you're looking for, this makes a lot of sense. There'll be less spinning of wheels, and you'll save time in the long run and money in your job search expenses. And also, if you rush out and find the wrong job, you may be miserable for the next 15 to 20 years, and you certainly don't want that, do you? Or you might be out pounding the pavement again, searching for a job all over in 6 months to a year, and you certainly don't want that either. Now, it may sound like fantasy, but I firmly believe from personal experience and from talking to many others that you deserve a vocation that will pay you to have a good time, and those positions are out there. So make yourself this pledge. For the next 15 to 30 days, however you want to devote to that mental vacation, I will take an extended respite from the stress and tension of being unemployed, and I refuse to let current frustrations get me down. And over those 15 to 30 days, whatever, I will examine a broad variety of career and lifestyle options. I may decide to recommit to my present career with renewed energy and purpose and find a job very similar to the one that I lost. Or to the contrary, I may decide to embark upon something totally new and different. Pause now to consider two essential prerequisites to job search success. First of all, without hesitation, you must be willing to venture outside your normal comfort zone. After all, you're on vacation, and you are seeking more than just gainful employment. In fact, you're seeking a whole fresh, new, positive outlook, both upon your career and upon life in general. And I implore you to ignore every self-imposed boundary, because just doing the same thing over and over again is not going to get you the results that you're seeking. What vocation would you pursue were it impossible for you to fail? That's something to ask yourself. Indeed, if you locate a position ideally suited to your talents, personality, and intellect, you will not fail. After a period of reflection, let's begin by writing out the ideal position for you. On a blank sheet of paper, either by hand or on the computer, on the top of the page, list a job title and the nature of your employee, be it large firm, small firm, federal, state, or local government, college, school district, nonprofit, self-employed, whatever. You're, in effect, preparing your own ideal position description, then list the job functions and duties that you will perform, the required vocational skills and education to hold that position, and the person to whom you would report, and that might be no one if your goal is self-employment, and then list positions that would report to you. And here's a key, an annual compensation you realistically would expect to earn. And don't just write some pie-in-the-sky number down. You need to do some research into the field that you're interested in to come up with a realistic estimate. And what if you have trouble defining your ideal position? I know a lot of people have been doing the same thing for so long, they can't really picture doing anything differently. But I trust that you don't just punt and seek to choose a job identical to the one you just lost simply because you refuse to expand your horizon and look at different options. Instead, ask yourself several questions if you're kind of at lost ends on what to do next. How do I most like to spend my free time when nobody's telling me what to do? What were my childhood dreams? Who were my heroes? As an adult, who in the whole world would I most likely like to be, and why? Of everyone I know, who has the best job and career of all those people I know personally? What vocation do I most admire? What career profile makes my heart jump? And what do friends and loved ones tell me I should be doing to earn a living? That's always a good clue. I know I used to be told I should be a school teacher. Didn't really want to be one, but maybe I should have been. At this point, don't worry about actually how you're going to earn a living at your ideal position. At this point, you're just trying to think about what you'd really like to do with the rest of your productive years. Now, as a next step, pause to examine your ideal position description as you would examine an attractive internet job posting or a help wanted advertisement in your local paper, and ask yourself five questions as you would if you saw this posting. Based on my background and education, am I qualified now? Would a hiring manager or executive recruiter consider me for this position? If not fully qualified now, how much time, energy, and funding would it take to become qualified? And how much would I earn pursuing my dream vacation? Is it enough to support our lifestyle? And finally, how about my spouse and children? Would they support my transition and share in any financial sacrifice? What if it requires a move? Would my spouse be able to find another job at a new location? Are the kids willing to change schools? All those are factors, obviously. And if the position is still a go, take time to visualize yourself on the job performing routine daily functions. Have you ever attempted similar tasks to earn your living? You need to convince yourself beyond a reasonable doubt, as they put it in lawsuits, that this is how you want to spend the next 5 to 10 years. Now the $64,000 question, am I ready to transform my dream vocation into my next job and career? The bottom line, until you and I can afford to retire, we must somehow contribute a worthwhile product or service that others are willing to pay for. And if, after thinking about it, you decide your dream vocation, as presently defined, is either somewhat or totally unrealistic, but you know for certain you want something new, what are your options? Well, think about possible revisions to the former job you held, and if you didn't like it, what would have made it made you happy? What would have made it a good job? For example, a different boss or a restructured workload with fewer tight deadlines. Maybe you love the job, and of course you have no choice because you've been laid off, but think about that job and how it would have been better. Now write down a list, as many as you can imagine, of potential alternative vocations that would utilize your strengths and talents and would provide you with job satisfaction, would be something you'd really like to be doing. And this time, list only realistic career options. Take the blinders off, and you know, maybe you listed Hollywood actor as your ideal vocation, but that probably isn't real realistic. So maybe you want to be a motivational speaker or something else where you're up in front of people, but you're not on the big screen. You know, at 50, with no medical school, internship, or residency, you're not likely to become a physician anytime soon. But how about hospital administration, a manufacturer's rep for a drug company, opening a vitamin or health food store, or maybe even an at-home distributor of a healthcare product? All those might be possibilities if health is really your passion. And once you narrow down some viable alternatives, ask yourself the same five questions about each of them. Am I qualified for this job and career choice now? Would a potential employer or investor consider me for this position or fund my startup? If not fully qualified now, can I afford the time and money required to learn necessary skills? And would the anticipated compensation fund our family lifestyle? And once again, do family members, would they support me in this particular transition? And your ambitious goal over the next several days and weeks is to select a specific job or a small business purchase or a startup as your primary target vocation. Obviously, you want to have a few backups in mind, too, if that one doesn't work out. In the end, your choice may turn out to be nothing but an enhanced version of your most recent position, and there's nothing wrong at all with that if you really loved your last job. But be flexible and don't box yourself into a canyon where there are a few options. You may need to look at a whole different type of employer, maybe a completely different industry, and maybe in a city far away. Also, be certain to keep in mind two or three backup career options if your primary choice just doesn't pan out. Believe me, once you have a clear vision in mind of the precise target vocation you seek, things will go smoother. Over the next several weeks or months, you now have a full-time job, and that job is locating someone to hire or pay you to pursue your dreams. And believe me, you'll be light years ahead of your competition. Just like with a GPS on your car or an excellent road map, you'll have an intended destination firmly in mind, directions on how you might get there. And don't wait to land the job. Start thinking right away, visualizing yourself routinely working at and enjoying life in your target vocation, and plan for, in your mind, for some of the rewards mentally and others that you will have once you attain that position. Begin now to think and act like an incumbent so that potential employers will recognize you right away as someone special who would add value to them. And tune in next week when we'll conclude our journey from pink slip to career promised land. Next week we'll talk about packaging and marketing yourself as that essential one in a million hire for your next boss. And we'll get into much details on marketing and packaging yourself as that essential hire. And I'll also interview an expert guest who helps men and women in their late 40s, 50s, and 60s to land six-figure positions, certainly someone that'll be worth talking to, and you won't want to miss it. Also, during the week ahead, don't neglect to visit our brand-new redesigned website, www.middleagerenewal.com. And I urge you again to preview my book, A Midlife Challenge Wake Up, which is a comprehensive roadmap to a bountiful and joyful second half of life. And if you go to our website, middleagerenewal.com, a free gift awaits you. And we'll talk to you again next week. Goodbye for now from Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.